Hi everyone, I'm Greg Lowe from Down Under in Australia. Fabric Down Under is a production from SQL Down Under. It covers Microsoft Fabric, a trademark of Microsoft Corporation. Opinions and views expressed in the podcast are individual and don't necessarily reflect the opinions and views of SQL Down Under or of Microsoft Corporation. Introducing Show 8 with guest Heidi Hastings. Welcome. Our guest today is Heidi Hastings. Heidi is a business intelligence professional and former software developer with over 10 years' experience in Microsoft products. She's an MVP, MCT, and holder of many certifications, along with being an ALM, DLM enthusiast and Azure DevOps fan and co-founder and organizer of the Adelaide Power BI User Group. Heidi's a regular attendee at tech events, including Azure Boot Camps, DevOps Days, SQL Saturdays, Definity, and Past Summit. And I tend to run into her in various places around the world and certainly around the country. So welcome, Heidi.
Thanks, Greg. Yeah, super excited to be on the podcast today. I mean, I don't think I hold as many certs as you, but, you know, there's still time.
No, it's all good. So listen, first up, because I haven't had you on before, so tell people who you are and where you're from, basically.
Yeah, so from the accent, you've probably picked up that I'm Australian. If not, I am Australian. Born and raised here in South Australia. I work in Adelaide at the moment as a data analytics consultant. So for those of you around the world, in the middle, down the bottom is South Australia, and that's Adelaide is the main city there. Mostly I work on just all things Microsoft stack. I mean, I know AWS and GCP are a thing, but I prefer to stick in the Microsoft realm. And can't let go of my software development roots. Still want to do all my version control.
Yes, that's good. And so listen, in terms of Fabric, one of the things that when it first appeared, I thought was most limiting was where we were at with source control and things like that. So tell us the story. Where are we at?
I think we still got to be like the most limiting feature, sadly. Mm-hmm. I'd love it if source control was the number one feature, but the reality is organizations are still on that learning journey in any of their data estates, you know, database projects mm-hmm. for SQL Server solutions, database projects for Fabric data warehouse solutions. They're still getting up to speed, but we do have the native integration, which is very mm-hmm. cool. So inside Fabric, in the service, if you're in there in a workspace level, you can tie a workspace to an Azure DevOps Git repository or just recently a GitHub Git repository. So it means we can automatically link those workspaces to a source control repository and sync the items back and forth.
Yep.
Where we're limited there is not all item types are supported.
Indeed.
And then, you know, some of the change and release management that we've come to know and love in the data platform world, how we can just do Azure DevOps pipelines. Fabric's still a little bit behind in that space. I mean, we can use Azure DevOps. We can also use the Fabric deployment pipelines, which is sort of an expansion on the Power BI deployment pipelines.
Mm-hmm.
But given we're Fabric, we get access to it. We don't have to have like any extra things on top of it, whereas Power BI had to have premium. But it's still that case of we can't just automatically change over connection strings. If we're doing parent-child pipeline mm-hmm. executions, those become a bit buggy.
Okay, so look, one of the things I suppose we should start, because for a lot of people, they might not be into this at all, given the Fabric audience. And so in terms of the source control, so we're talking about Git repositories, and most people at the moment would be using Azure DevOps or Azure Repos as part of Azure DevOps.
Exactly. And I'm still a fan of Azure Repos and Azure DevOps. I mean, I know they've just introduced GitHub, but that's a thing. But a lot of people who've never seen either are mm-hmm. probably just using something like SharePoint or even a file storage mechanism. So when it comes to things like Power BI, PBIX files, that's one thing. But when you shift over to any of the data engineering experiences, any of the data science experiences, you know, any of the data activator, real-time insights, it's not like you can just grab those items download a copy of them in any format, whether it's JSON, you know, anything like that, any DDL style solution, you don't get that with Fabric. So you can't just take those items and put them in any source control-esque platform you might like. So I think you really do have to transition.
I should mention that, I suppose if you look at how the data platform has sort of evolved with these sort of tooling over the years, I mean, the with the normal databases, the closest thing we've had there have been database projects in Visual Studio and eventually made their way across into Azure Data Studio as well. And do you find customers using those much at all?
Sadly, no. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a bit like sensitivity labels and information protection. It's really important. It's really valuable. But I think until a customer gets burnt, they really don't look at it at all.
Yeah.
They're so used to doing things in a manual way that they're not even at the point of, well, what happens? How do I do the change and release management? How do I do the recovery? They're just sort of like build, add. And until they get burnt, that's when they go, oh, what happened? Oh, someone deleted something. How do we prevent it?
Look, it is a different mindset in terms of how you might sort of think about doing projects. And I suppose I try and sort of ease people into it, even if they're not used to it. So, for example, instead of doing all the work in Visual Studio projects and deploying from there, I mean, I often think at the very least, they could import their database across into a database project and then at least periodically just keep doing schema compares and keeping the database project up to date and in source control.
And I think we must share the same mindset on that, Greg, because I reckon about 5 years ago or even earlier, I used to present on bringing a BI environment into source control, so pre a lot of the Azure SQL estates. And I would say to people, you can go proactive or retrospective. Like proactive means you're starting doing development in those tools and then publishing out. Retrospective means, you know, you're just cowboy developing somewhere and then bringing it in so you've got a copy. Yeah. I wish Fabric had that option just to be an enabler for the people as an adoption path. Like Azure Data, we've got familiar with things, as you said, the database projects. But even in the Azure Data Factory world, we could hit the view code button. We could export the ARM templates. We at least had that quick and dirty, hey, just grab a copy and save it somewhere. But with Fabric, we don't have that. And with the online editing experience, it makes it even more risky that two developers are in there, both making a change. And it's like, you know, and there is no undo button. I mean, Data Warehouse has the recovery options, but it's not like that's going to be the be all and end all. No, so I wish.
Not at all. And look, you mentioned ADF in there. So Azure Data Factory, it had a different model again, right? So this is one where for each data factory, we connect it up to a repository and it sort of at least the upside too, when you connected it to a repository, you had the option to save instead of just publish, which was a world of goodness. Even with that, so the thing there is, if you do a save, it would do basically a commit into the repository. But it was the whole data factory, and so it was any of the things involved in that. When you did a publish, it then pushed it to a different branch where that happened. But what I keep running into with people using ADF, I kind of like the tight integration, a bit like that. But have you had scenarios where you've needed to roll back commits or things in data factory, and how have you found that?
To be honest, I've been pretty lucky. I haven't had to do a rollback. The most I've had to do is sit and edit around in VS Code the ARM template to fix up the link services. Mm-hmm. Or early on, I reckon, I want to say it was June last year, I had some trouble with publishing, where because it is that all or nothing out of the box, you go to publish and it really just wanted everything turned off before it did a publish. So it wanted an integration runtime off, even though I made no changes to it. And it took 40 minutes to bring the integration runtime back online. And I was like, this is not acceptable for a production release. Like, I can't bring it down for that long. So I've been really lucky, but for the most part, I'm quite good at reading JSON, like being from a software development background. So I'm okay with just going view code, edit away,
yeah, that
paste
was
over the top.
One of the key things with Data Factory is that every object is able to be just represented as a chunk of JSON, which you could edit directly most of the time, you know, with most of the objects. And then they become something that's very, very easy to push to source control and very easy to compare.
Yeah, and Fabric just misses that mark. It just misses the mark. I mean, I am appreciative that when we do use the Git integration in Fabric, we can at least enter a comment, which is a bit of a step up from what we saw in Azure Data Factory. You just commit and it just says pipeline updated. And you're like, some commentary would be nice, or a linked work item would be even better. So we get a bit of benefit there on the Fabric side. But yeah, the fact we can't just go in, and it's, you can see the code in Azure DevOps, but how many citizen devs, and even to the extent of how many pro devs, are we going to actually see switch over to Azure DevOps to try and revert something and then sync it back into Fabric?
Yeah. And so look,
I'm not sure we're going to see
it. Data Factory, the thing that I keep finding is that I go in and I go back to, let's say, some earlier commit point, and then I go, I want a copy of it at that point. And then I find that everything goes back except some of the linked services, some of the, you know, so some of the things just don't play the game the same way. And I do wish the whole thing would, you know, like I actually expect that when I have a source control, that if I roll it back, that I'll go back to exactly everything will be like it was back at that time. And I even in Data Factory, I find that's not like that.
Yeah, that's weird because like I remember even pre Azure DevOps, pre Visual Studio Team Services, we're talking TFS days with the, what is it, the Team Foundation version control repo, where we could just branch off a specific file and make changes. I kind of miss those days because when you just want to change like one or two things and then bring it back, like I'm just picturing everyone going new workspace, they'll take a branch, they'll figure out what they're doing, they'll tie the new workspace to it, and then check it's all okay, and then override, like brute force, override the original one and sync it.
That is what they will do.
But even then, I mean, now I'm talking to customers going, if you do multiple workspaces and you shard your solutions across, you've now got multiple branches across, and it's like multiple branches tied to different workspaces. Now your dev test prod gets really complicated because you're like, well, I need a dev workspace, but yeah, but I need it linked to this other workspace for the next thing in the pipeline, like Lakehouse in one, Warehouse in another, and you're like, well, hang on, now I need two workspaces with the matching branch, and then when I merge them back into a pull request, you can't go pull request cross repository, so now you've got to sync your pull requests and then get them all committed, and meanwhile someone else in the team's gone and hot fixed and put in a change, and you're like, uh-oh, we got to muck around with merging. And it'll get there. It'll get there.
Yeah.
But I kind of wish they didn't start from behind where Azure Data was. Yeah. Like I feel like Azure Data went on the journey. Power BI separately went on the journey. They got to a fairly stable setup where we figured out how to work around the nuances and it wasn't too Band-Aid and sticky tape. I think Fabric started from a step back from both those spaces. And now because we're linking it with other things in the SaaS platform, like separating workspaces because of compute or because of security or something else, we add a layer of complexity and our version controls are behind. And now we're just hacking around, or we're making changes going, because we need a version control, we're going to go with a particular architecture in terms of our workspaces. And then it's just a bit, it's a bit messy for my liking.
Yeah, look, and so I kind of like the Data Factory model, you know, where there's a fairly tight integration and things are JSON and they sort of save them for you. But yeah, the thing I miss there is the interaction with the branches and stuff and being able to go back to different commits and, you know, the Git stuff, right? And so I find I have to then go into Azure DevOps to do the Git stuff and then start connecting up Data Factory to that again, and that's an unfortunate feeling. The other thing is that if I try and deploy Data Factory using Azure DevOps pipelines, some of the defaults for that are still not great. So for example, the default template actually deploys an entire resource group And I've seen people, you know, deploy a data factory and remove thousands of objects that were in the resource group because the, you know, the default option says full or whatever. It doesn't say incremental. And you think, thanks.
You know, oh, yeah. That complete
really,
toggle.
Really nasty. Yeah, so learn that one pretty quickly. And the but at least guys like Kamil Nowinski, and shout out to Kamil, but he at least had better options for how to like deploy individual pieces and so on. And so I suppose then where we headed, we then headed into the options with Power BI. And the Power BI guys, when they were first doing the deployment pipeline stuff, I know I was in meetings and I was talking to them and going, can't we just fit in with the stuff that's already there? And I think they wanted to do something simpler, and that's where they were sort of running off and building their own deployment stuff. But to me, it's a bit of a problem because that's okay if you view the Power BI thing as the whole world, you know, but you're often wanting to deploy other things and so on as part of the same thing. And there wasn't really a good hookup again with, so if all you were doing was Power BI reports, that wasn't too bad, but that's not a big picture thing. But at least with the nowadays, with the Power BI reports, we also had, you think about the things that go into source control. And so we had, we tend to use thin reports where we connect live query all the time. And so the report itself is not very big. So that's not too scary. If you had ones where you do import, you could do a PBIT and you could save sort of a template. But now we got the Power BI projects. Have you been playing around with them much?
I had the chance to play with them in previews. Cool. Really, really impressed with it because, yes, like you said, I was doing the PBIX to the PBIT, and I actually have one customer where I went, okay, none of this is in a source control spot where I feel comfortable with us working on it. So I'm going to take it, and then I looked and went 70 reports and there's no API. So I actually went mm-hmm. and used Power Automate Desktop to open all 70 reports and save them as PBIT when I went off to lunch.
Yep.
So the computer kept working while I ducked away. So now with the PBIP, so much easier because we can just say, hey, convert this, and we can do those diffs. And sure, it's looking at visual layouts and things. So it's a bit like mm-hmm. looking at a sys package from SQL Server Integration Services days. You're just looking at these chunks of code. But it's something we can translate, so we can see them.
Yeah, we should say it's a folder that you're saving, and it's just full of files that are mostly JSON, but now we've got the new semantic model format as well, right?
I'm not a huge fan of it because I'm like, another language? We already had a lot. Can't we just reuse one we already had? But
I would have been comfy with it just being JSON.
Yeah. I know, because I was like, look, I can use SQL Server to interrogate JSON, just, you know, JSON paths and away we go. Now with this thing, I'm like, oh, it's human readable. That's great, but I want the computer to read it, not the human. Yep. You know, each to their own, and we got to work with it. But I think it opens the doors. But you're totally right on that deployment pipeline problem because mm-hmm. even when they introduced it for Power BI, they put it as a premium-only feature. Yes. So you've got the Power BI Pro people can't even use that feature. So realistically, there's possibly more adoption happening with the PBIP than it is deployment pipelines. And
yeah, I'm pretty sure I read something the other day where they were winding back the wording on that.
Stay tuned.
That should be rechecked, yeah, because I know, again, we're all initially going, why is this only a premium thing? It didn't make any sense because it's an option in Power BI Desktop. I mean, it doesn't really make any sense. And so it sounds like that might be just across the board, that one now. So, but anyway, we need to check. So.
Yeah, it's interesting where people make some choices, and specifically people being like where the product team, because you look at Data Activator, they could have gone down the path of building all their own integration pieces, but they went, no, we're going to link up with Power Automate.
Yes.
So you look at Git integration and you go, you've already got Azure DevOps. Heck, you have the entire GitHub is a Microsoft brand, and those solutions have been doing it for, you know, decades of working on how to do software releases. Now, data analytics solutions are just data analytics solutions. They're still data mm-hmm. products. They're effectively following the same trend as software development, you know, going down microservices, the thin, thick client stuff. It's mm-hmm. like, we are not like completely void of the same techniques and practices. So you sort of wonder, well, why didn't we leverage the maturity of Azure DevOps and GitHub, you know, whether it's GitHub Actions or Azure DevOps pipelines.
As I said, in the meetings, I was the one going, like, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah. it's like, if you want to make a better GUI, make it better on the Azure DevOps side. I do miss the classic pipeline, to be honest. I liked the visual look and feel. I can see my stages.
Now there's a really interesting thing, right? I've been in so many discussions. And of course, even if you look at Azure DevOps, if people haven't used that, they had originally a whole lot of what they'd call classic pipelines, and it was a very visual thing, you know, with GUI interface and you filled things in. And then they decided that it all should become just YAML text instead. And like, I was one of the ones sort of going, is this I mean, it's fabulous for people who come from Terraform and areas like that, but it, but if I look at the history of Windows, there's a reason people liked Windows more than Linux, right? And it feels to me like they just sort of lost that heritage by doing that.
I agree. I was disappointed. I was a huge fan of visually seeing, like, when my code is going through the different stages, what's the blocker, where did it error? I can see it visually. I can see the dependencies. I can see the impact. YAML, it is just text. I mean, I can understand it, but I'm like, we can still do the YAML because we can still say view the pipeline as code. So it wasn't like it wasn't there.
The YAML's more flexible. There's no argument at all. But there's no reason you couldn't have the, I mean, they do have the thing where you can sort of drag out a visual thing, fill it in, and then it writes the YAML for you. So it sort of has that. But yeah, it's, to me, it's a very weird arrangement that.
Well, and you look at Fabric and you go, well, what's the forecasted plan there when deployment pipelines are visual? It's like, are you going to transition that to YAML? And then they just introduced the whole concept of a task flow inside a workspace so people can visually see how the items correlate. And it's like, you're going full on visual there and yet your other solutions are going YAML, and you're going to have them integrate because we can use Azure DevOps to deploy things with the APIs. So it's like, are we going to be consistent?
YAML comes from a whole lot of the other tooling in a whole lot of other places, right? Like the Terraforms and, you know, a lot of these other things. But I look at a language, and if the basis of a language is that the way you define blocks of code is by indenting, that sort of feels fragile to me.
Absolutely. I mean, you quickly become installing every sort of formatter you can to be like, right, write it out and then hit the format button and make sure the indentation's exactly how we need it.
I've seen so many people copy and paste YAML and then it just doesn't work, and it's because they've screwed up something in the indenting and so on. Like, I mean, I get it. I see it. As I said, it's kind of flexible. There's a lot of things that are kind of nice about it and how it is in GitHub Actions and so on. But yeah, I think there's a whole part of the market that would have preferred the classic pipelines, you know, or an enhanced version of those. Yeah. So
if they had left the option for enable this to keep it, I probably would have done it. I mean, at some point I would have adapted over, but initially I would have liked to keep it, like have it as an option. Just go, look, if I'm not going to get certain features, but I don't need them, that's fine. Yep. It's like, I remember, like, you're running sys, you know, you run it in debug mode and you can visually see how all the tasks are put together. You run Azure Data Factory, Fabric Data Factory pipelines, you see visually how things are hanging together. So to lose that is like, oh, you know, I'm sure someone's probably going to build some third party thing to visually put it back. Yep. You know, monitoring my pipeline will now be visually representing of the YAML.
See, I must admit, I'm a fan where there's like a whole, you know, DevOps infrastructure and stuff that Microsoft already has. I would rather the new tooling sort of fit in, you know what I mean? Rather than go, let's just do our own thing, you know, because invariably they end up then trying to work out how to make it fit in.
Yeah, when you look at it, it's like, well, if they're saying use branches for Fabric, that's a Git thing. And it's like, you're saying do the pull request over in the Git environment, you know, so now you've got branching one. You've got the troubleshooting. You can't view the history in Fabric. You go view the history, well, you can view a limited history, but you can view that over in Azure DevOps. And you've already got to pay for a full license. It's not like there's a cut down license that says, hey, you want to use 80 or GitHub. So you might as well have like done some sort of adoption pathway to go, let's use this. And if you're already using it for your Azure data estate, most companies are probably going to be either Azure Data Plus Fabric or Solo Fabric or hybrid. So it's like, consistency. If I'm building three quarters of my data estate in Azure Data and then I'm mirroring it over to Fabric, I'm only using Fabric for the Power BI part, but I'm consistently using Azure DevOps for all my source control. So I kind of want to consistently use it for that change and release part as well, that CI/CD. So
Look, the other thing we should say too is that another reason Azure DevOps has been a good match with it for the moment has been the Active Directory support. And even if you're on the absolute bottom end of what's available in Azure DevOps, even the free license for up to 5 users, I mean, it does have full Active Directory support and stuff like that. And so,
well, I'd love to get more people aware of some of the little tips and tricks like I've heard at events where people go, look, spin up a trial, Fabric trial or an F2 if you can, if you got access to Azure, spin up an F2, put your workspace in it, Git integrate it, copy all your stuff over, and then shift it back to another capacity or a different offering. So shift your workspace from being on the trial or the Fabric capacity back onto Pro. So at least then you've got stuff sitting in source control as at a point in
Yeah,
time, you know?
so I suppose then if we then go across to Fabric, so where do you see we're at the moment as to the different pieces that somebody would normally use, where we're at in terms of the CI/CD or source control integrations?
Level 1, maybe level 0.5, really, because
So the Fabric Data Factory, if we start at the front end,
we've got the ability to put those in. They're good. I think almost got to double check my thoughts here, but almost all the functionality for a semi-standard, like if we're building our Medallion architectures, will be supported. Even things like doing child pipeline execution is still, we've got that option. We can have that all in source control and we can CI/CD it out. It's a little bit finicky to do. A lot of people are looking at putting in GUIDs and you got to parameterize that on your load. Notebooks we can do.
Hi, this is Greg coming to you from another time and place. If you have a data-related project that needs to get off to a great start with the right architecture, or if you have an existing project that's off the rails, why not contact us? We help organizations of all sizes, from startups to tier one financials, and we can help you too. Check us out at sqldownunder.com. One thing that has been a frustration for me is the way they change the scheduling. In the again in Azure Data Factory, we had really flexible scheduling options, and now we have this one simplistic schedule per pipeline, and that's just completely inappropriate for what I do. Like for example, I've got a pipeline that say runs on a Sunday at a certain time with certain parameters to do a complete load. Same pipeline runs every morning with a different lot of parameters, and then it runs certain hours of the day with a different lot of parameters. And like the best I've come up with at the moment in Fabric Data Factory is I've got to have 4 copies of the pipeline, each associated with a simple schedule, and that just makes absolutely no sense. So that's a problem.
No, and when I think that's the bigger problem, right? If we extrapolate that out and do it wider scale, Fabric's got all these limitations, and I think what's going to happen is people will start building solutions, then they'll look at it holistically and go, oh, limitation, 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 band-aid and sticky tape, band-aid and sticky tape. This is not good. Or you'll have people going, well, I didn't really want to switch from having SQL devs go to Python, but realistically, the notebook has more feature richness for what we want to do. So now I've got to teach everyone to go to Python so we can use notebooks and do everything that way. And so I think people are going to make different decisions based on those limitations. And in some cases, it's going to force them to do a complete, replatforming just because of that. Or they'll walk away from the platform and go, no. And I think go hybrid, right? If Azure Data's got everything, also the costing. Like Azure Data, you can do it at the resource level, look at your costs,
Yep.
set it all up, and then all you want to do is mirror that over to, put it in the right technology, mirror it over using the
Actually,
mirroring
Azure
feature,
Data Factory,
and then go for it.
with costs, it's one thing I never have customers complain about is the cost of Data Factory. And the only ones who've complained are people who use the integration services runtime, which I don't,
Or mapping
or people who
data
use data flows. Right. So those two things, if people use those, then they get big bills. But if I'm able to do things natively, then I've really not had a problem. And even if I have to do something complicated, I'll call out to an Azure function and I'll run that on a consumption basis, and that costs next to nothing to run as well. So generally, I've been able to get away with pretty low costs for the clients, in that regard.
Exactly. And aside from those two things, the one that it blows out where if a pipeline just runs till infinity because it's hit a bit of a snag and it just gets in a tizzy and keeps going. But there's ways and means to control that. You can have your longer inquiries, your log analytics, your alerting. But Fabric doesn't really have those things. And I think, where scheduling falls down, you can't even do workarounds. Like in some cases, you go, all right, well, can I call the pipeline from an API call somewhere? But a lot of the times with Fabric, they're building the functionality. The API is, however many releases behind the eight ball, so
It's not there yet, yeah,
you
to
can't
do
even
that
go,
sort of stuff.
I'll just write a notebook to custom execute this pipeline as and when I need it, but you can't even do that because often the API is not there, and it makes sense, but it's like shortcuts. They put in shortcuts, and everyone went, hang on, I've got to do this GUI for every single object. So 200 tables means 200 clicks through, and then quickly followed API integration. But unless we get that quickly following API integration, we can't do the workarounds. And even if it is, you can't rely, you can't assume that roadmap is huge. We're now talking about people who, it's like back in the day where SQL Server would get a change, Visual Studio wouldn't get the extensions for a good year later. Like Visual Studio 2022, I think, didn't get SIS until a year after it was already, released.
Yeah, they initially said they would ship it every time there was a Visual Studio new version. They said they'd ship within 3 months, but that's not what happened.
And I worry about that with Fabric. I mean, we've got some really awesome people working on it, but now you've got a number of multidisciplinary teams, and where they need something at the foundational level, at the Fabric level, it's like who gets in first, and then that's got to be there before they can light up the feature. In the same way, some of the stuff we want to see inside the different items is contingent on all the items being able to like do a read off it. So
Indeed. Okay, so we're saying in a workspace at the moment. So if we have, for example, a lake house, what level are we at the moment with the integration for that?
Lakehouse is not too bad. I mean, I unfortunately haven't looked at it in great depth because I sort of stick more in the warehouse
The
world
warehouse side, yep.
because a lot of the customers I'm working with are SQL fence. So it makes sense for them to go into warehouse, or they were looking at it before Lakehouse got the more granular security permissions. And we were looking, going, well, we don't want to give people workspace level permissions to just look at some database tables. I'd rather give them schema level. So we were using warehouse, which meant we could use a database project. So I'm not quite up to speed on what's happening with Lakehouse, other than everyone asking me, do I have to go Lakehouse if I want to go warehouse? Do I have to start with Lakehouse? I'm like, well, no, you don't. But because all the tutorials start with Lakehouse, it's kind of like assumed.
Everything assumes that. And look, and of course, the other obvious downsides of that, I mean, that people are not really talking about much, but every time you take data from one place and stick it somewhere else and then pick it up and put it somewhere else, you've got the what are the data types, what are the precision, what are, you just
Oh,
have
yeah.
all of those opportunities for it to not end up the same at the other end.
Well, and the other thing is, like, when you git integrate this stuff, it's just the definitions, it's not the data, because we don't want the data sitting in the Git repo. So even though you can, take your Lakehouse, git integrate it, go create a branch, move it, create a new workspace, which also is a little bit concerning for me that now I have to open up the permission to create workspaces on my tenant, but create the workspace, relink it up. All I've got is the structure of the lakehouse. I don't have any data populator. It's not like what was Redgate's product? It was like SQL clone, where I could just,
Clone, yeah.
boom, clone it over. There isn't that. I mean, so it's like even if you do take the lakehouse, you take the definition, that's it. You still then need to take whatever you were using to populate it, whether it was a notebook, a pipeline, a Dataflow Gen 2, or you were using, Azure Databricks, or you were using, Azure Storage or AZ Copy or any of those sorts of things. You then have
So
to go get
what about
those.
warehouses then? So where do you think the
Ah,
warehouses are at?
they're ahead of the curve because we can do the database project.
Yeah.
Not fully feature rich. And I think the advantageous putting it as a button on the, I guess, the equivalent of an office ribbon up the top.
Yep.
Because now, even the people that didn't know what it was or never heard of it, they're probably looking at that button going, well, what's this? It's here. It's dead center on the interface. Maybe I should start using it. So I
Yeah.
think that will naturally bring a few people having a look at it, exploratory, but maybe not
Yeah,
fully.
where I've already with some of the fabric stuff started to run into challenges too. Again, I just have endless issues with identity. But again, if I'm logged on as somebody in Fabric, that isn't necessarily who I'm logged on in Visual Studio. And just those sort of things, I start to run into issues as well. So.
Well, even things like with that identity stuff, like we saw it on the Power BI space where, you've got to own the connection and then you can take it over and go do stuff. Fabric's still a little bit same, but then there's things where if you created the item, it's all tied to you. So then people start going, oh, well, I need to be logged in as some specific account to do it. And then organizations are going, admin privilege versus normal. We don't want elevated privileges being your normal account. So now we want you to have two accounts on the Fabric space, which means two in Entra. And then I even look at things like trusted workspace, going, hang on, trusted workspace is a workspace identity. But if I've got to create all these branches to do my development, all those branches need the identity. And then all those identities need to be on the Azure thing. And I'm like, this just doesn't feel
Yeah,
great.
I do already hear a lot of tales of people creating objects in Fabric and then the people leave and then it's a problem and who owns the objects and so on. It's at least one of the things that in SQL Server was pretty well sorted out, where at least if you were a DBO in a database and you created something, it was owned by DBO, and so not by you. And so I keep thinking there's the need for something equivalent. I'm not sure what it is either, in the case of the Fabric one, but maybe if you are some sort of admin on a workspace, if you create things in the workspace, then they should be probably owned by some special role or something.
I mean, you do like I look at the admin portal where you go into the connections, and there's if you happen to be a tenant admin, it's just this long list of connections everywhere, and you kind of wonder, should we have some sort of vault-esque scenario where it's like, all right, this is to do with connections, authentication, authorization. Only this particular security role can touch it. And it's hard because I know, a lot of us, like myself included, come from the SQL Server, the database relational world. So we naturally want to go, hey, well, things like schema level security work for us. Can't we do a thing similar to that? But
The
then you
same
look at
sort
it,
of thing. Yeah, exactly.
and then you go look from the opposite side and you're like, well, hang on, the Power BI people looked at it this way. And then you've got the Lake people coming in from, your Azure, your Databricks world, and they're going, oh, no, we do it this way. And you're just like, okay, we need to either come up with something completely brand new, but make it flexible yet secure and easy to do, easy to audit. Because I think that's the other thing with all this stuff is, how do I just quickly see,
How do you order it?
what user account did people use on all these connections? I can't see it. I can't even say link it to a key vault because that's just not there. And so I just wonder, like, how are we going to track what's going on? So if someone does leave, the easy thing to do is like, enter and remove their account, disable. But if it's going to have the impact it's going to have, then we need to be able to quickly go, well, that user account, what do they own across the entire tenant? Or at least minimally, what do they own in the workspace that I'm an admin for? And ideally, if I'm a Fabric admin, I can go see the whole tenant and just be able to quickly go, all right, let's change all the ownerships over.
Yeah.
You know, same
So
way like.
what do you do with semantic models then at the moment? Because we
Leave them
still use a
alone.
lot of live query things, and of course the beauty of analysis services and even Azure analysis services and is we can still do Visual Studio projects on that. They're not great, but and we can enhance that with Tabular Editor and things like that to for a better story. And we can push that into Fabric. So, I mean, there are options around that. So at least there are options outside the workspace to manage that sort of thing. But I think
And
there'd probably be not a lot of Fabric people who are currently doing that.
no, because pre-fabric, pre-direct like mode, or even post-fabric, but without direct like mode, we could do things like use parameters inside the Power BI reporting file when we're defining that semantic model. But you don't see any of that sort of setup. Well, I also had a bit of a buggy experience with that because I'd set for parameters, say, all right, the server name's this, the connection's this. But as soon as I got to publish it, if it's using an on-prem gateway, it just didn't like the combination of parameters defined on the semantic model and being able to pick up the correct gateway. So I ended up just republishing all the time. But then you look at direct like mode, everything's defined in the browser and Fabric just takes care of it. So if you happen to be sitting, in a warehouse and you hit the semantic model button, you don't touch any of the connectivity. It just builds it out for you. So there's never really that thing that says, oh, by the way, why are you here? Do you want to define, a variabilized connection? And
And
then,
look at one of the other things that is missing for me if I do Azure analysis, or like an analysis services project in Visual Studio, for connections, I also have no option to say use a managed identity. And so then I get back to the question of, okay, so what identity am I using to then connect to a database or something to get data?
Yeah, and then, if it is a case of a service principal, for example, on some of the options, it's OAuth, basic, service principal. They're all different, which is, like the connection merry-go-round as you're trying to do different things. Then you're going to end up with all these enter accounts because people will go, oh, hang on, we can't use the same one for these different purposes. And then security chimes in and goes, yeah, you're absolutely right. Dev test and prost, different connections. Every single data source, different connections. Every single platform,
And
and you're
so
just
they've
like,
created
oh.
all separate applications. And see, the other thing that I don't love about service principles is they expire as well. Where at least managed identity, it just keeps rotating passwords and things for you forever, right? So it is a set and forget thing once you get it in place.
Well, I'm sure if we talk to the people who built it, they do what we do when we build solutions. I built it this way. It has these limitations. We just have to work around it. It's not ideal. You hope to get better. But sometimes you're like, well, couldn't you just hold off rolling out the feature until it was there? Because we
Yeah,
know that,
everybody I see
yeah.
doing it ends up using SQL
Well, and the hard part is like, we
logins.
experienced this before. Like, we experienced it with Power BI, we experienced it with Azure Data. It's not like this wasn't like new. Like I remember when Fabric got Data Factory pipelines and source control wasn't there. And I was like, what do you mean it's not there? Like we fought forever to get it everywhere else. And the first thing we do is it's not there. And I'm just thinking the same with this stuff. It's like we've all adapted to managed identity being a better solution. And I think for the most part, most of the industries and the community have all sort of come around to that thinking. So we know we might have to fall back to, basic SQL logins, but we'd prefer to do it. And so to now not have it, we're basically reinforcing the thing we just tried to change. It's like,
And every
yeah.
single security thing from Microsoft, when it finds SQL login, says don't use them.
Well, and the thing is, once you do it once, people are going to go, well, I don't want to do managed identity over here and SQL over here and service principal over here. It's like, I just want consistency across my products. And security will end up going, well, if I have to make an exemption for one and it's the same thing, like conceptually, it's to access some data, then every project team around the country is going to be going, well, you let them do it. So why won't you let us do it? And then next thing you know, it's passed around accounts and we're like, oh.
It is one that frustrates me because ever since Fabric was like a twinkle in their eye, I feel like I've been the one in the room putting the hand up about managed identity the whole time. And eventually they were saying, yeah, it's coming. But of course then it came F64 and above. Workspaces. And I'm like, oh, really? Because again, to me, no matter what size the client is, I expect to be able to do the same sort of security stuff. And particularly when you say, look, you know, I can pay thousands and thousands of dollars a month and I can't do it, but I can buy an Azure SQL database for $8 a month and it does it, right?
Or at least have it as an option. Like if I want to do F2 and that specific security feature, like I'd love to have like the expansion pack and go, look, I don't need trusted workspace, but if I could have managed identity for these connections, I'll pay the additional charge to get it, you know, and then look at it from, is it workspace specific or is it the whole tenant can have that feature? You know, I'd rather have that as a pay more offering than to immediately jump from like F2, F64. Like I worked with a lot of companies who weren't even using premium capacity.
I think it's architecturally though, I'm sure that under the covers, the way they've implemented the objects, and the problem is in Azure, they can only stick the identity on sort of a thing that's an object. And because it's a whole lot of shared stuff below that, I think architecturally they've probably worked themselves in a bit of a corner with this. And but of course we've all been screaming at them saying it has to change. So we'll wait and see what happens. But see, even Azure Analysis Services today, you can't make a connection using a managed identity out to a database. And that's such a pity because you can assign managed identity and or system and user assign managed identities to Azure Analysis Services, but it just won't make a connection using it. And I've asked about that and I don't expect that to ever change, shall we say.
I know.
As, being not flavor of the month, right? But
it is the hard part because security is the flavor of the month. Like, you know, it's... Yeah. Oh, although I don't know, this month it might turn into disaster recovery and multi-platform.
On the tail of the CrowdStrike thing. Yeah, indeed.
But I hope that they change it over time. I mean, I think ultimately the community's got to get quite vocal about it. The customers have got to get quite vocal about it. So at least they know that it's like, no, this isn't just a one person in the room needs it. It's more broadly. Mm. A lot of customers are looking for it, and it'll block their adoption to Fabric if it's not there.
Yeah.
But I think
So if we've got customers who haven't done any of this yet with source control and things and whatever, where do they start? What do you suggest they do to start?
Oh, it's a bit tenfold, really, because as an initial thing, it's like don't go into Fabric going, I'm straight away going to do something like Power BI Copilot. That's just, you know, ridiculous thinking. I think you have to get familiarity with the platform. It's different to, say, Office 365, where people were very familiar with Word and Excel. And so when Office 365 came about, it wasn't too much of an adoption change. I think Fabric, on the other hand, if you try and go all advanced, you'll lose it. So I think you've got to start with the basics going, let's just get a familiarity with the platform. Let's go through the end-to-end tutorials. Now, it's not saying this is the best practice, this is the must-how to do it. It's just giving you an understanding of what is it, how does it work, what are the linkages, so you can at least have that thought process going in. Because you can't think of Fabric like you did Azure Data. You can't say, well, I've always done private endpoints, I've always done key vaults. They don't exist. It's a SaaS platform. Yep. You got to think more like Office 365 and go, okay, what is this thing capable of doing?
Although private endpoints, as an example, I would expect that'll get fleshed out properly over time as well. But again, at the moment, I would be surprised if that was not an F64 and above type thing. It's an example of the sort of thing.
Totally.
That probably would be.
Totally right. But I think people have got to start with understanding the platform. Do those Fabric analyst dinner days just so they've got the theoretical, this is what is possible, and then go in it more broadly and go, okay, if we want to do these solutions. And I think the other thing people have to be really careful of is Fabric is so easy to just turn on and start using, but you turn on and start using and you open yourself up to so much risk. And it's not like there's going to be, you know, Clippy popping up everywhere going, ooh, just a reminder, you might want to set some security here, or ooh, just a reminder, have you got multi-factor authentication on? So I think that's something people have to be conscious of is it's not going to give you reminders to think about security, to think about you know, where's your data living? Where's your data moving? Don't create copies everywhere. The thought process is the biggest thing that you have to change when you're adopting Fabric, is to go, don't think about it like any other platform. Think about it like a SaaS platform. And then on the back of that, you know, effectively do the cloud adoption, you know, well-architected framework thinking, where it's going, what's this going to cost me? How am I going to secure it? And then start researching into those points to make sure that you've covered what works for your org. And it could be something as simple as, all right, we have two admins on a workspace in case someone leaves, and then we don't give out any other workspace permission. We're only going to give people, you know, consuming access to whatever data product they're consuming. So if it's a Power BI app, it's that. If it's, you know, a Delta Parquet table, if it's one of the tables, you go, well, we're going to shortcut that and give them access to that over there and keep it contained. So they're not accessing the full thing, they're just accessing that one object in their little area. So it's a thought, it's really the thought process, because so many people I've seen today, they start comparing Fabric to Azure Data, and then they get frustrated because they're trying to do something they do in Azure Data the same way in Fabric. And it's like, you can't. Similar names, similar features, not feature parity, not the same. Like even today, I was looking, Azure Data Factory says sync. Fabric Data Factory Pipeline says destination. So it's like, you've got to change the thought process. So it's almost like going, all right, ignore the fact that it's a Microsoft product. Let's say some third-party vendor just rolled out a new SaaS platform. Evaluate it for its merits, use it for its merits, but also think outside the box. Because it's such a big analytical platform, Microsoft only provides you documentation to a certain extent, and then the rest you actually have to try out and go, well, I want to do this. Will this let me do this? Yeah, it will. Like, I looked at it and went, why move my entire data estate into Fabric if I've already got it in Azure Data? But maybe instead of having it in a lake over in Azure Data, I can put it into Azure SQL and mirror it over. Or if I've got it in a lake, I'll shortcut it over and then, you know, start to adopt Fabric from that point, and then hybridize and changes as it gets more mature.
Yeah, the whole mirroring shortcut, the whole that's another whole topic for another day. But the I have pretty strong opinions on mirroring, but anyway, so that'll be a good topic for another day.
Well, and
So
I'd even recommend for teams looking to go down the road of Fabric, do what agile teams used to do. They get in a scrum master, they get in an agile coach, sits with their team, gets them up to speed. Like, don't go it alone. Go, this thing's new, it's changing, it's evolving. Get a consultant in to basically mentor your team through the process. You know, the thinking's different, the solutions are different. You've got to be
Yeah, again, I
multifaceted.
love the word mentor in that regard, because that's what you want, is you want someone who comes in and works with you to show you how to do it, not someone who comes in and does it.
Yeah, it's like, get your teams doing Fabric Analyst in a day, do all the learn modules, get a foundation of knowledge, even do the, you know, beginner intro to Git, any of those courses, so that you've got a level of source control understanding. Then get a mentor in, go through, you know, if you've got Microsoft partnerships, get fast track teams involved to help you with your solution designs. And that way you're not, you know, you're going to hit all these gotchas and you don't know what you don't know. And Fabric's so big that you're going to hit them without realizing. And it's going to be 6 months down the track when something happens that you go, oh, we should have done that.
Yeah, I think also I think Azure DevOps is, or sort of Azure repos as part of Azure DevOps, is probably a gentler introduction to repositories and stuff as well. So I think cross-linking that across to GitHub and stuff is probably just another level that maybe you could push to the future if you wish to do that.
Yeah, I'm certainly staying camp Azure DevOps, and Azure repos.
Yeah, I actually think it's an extraordinary value what you get for it, and particularly also I just love the fact there's still a 5 user free license thing, and that's amazing what you can do with that. So yeah, no, that's
Well,
absolutely
and
wonderful.
like we talked about earlier with the whole you know, you have backups and you have recovery and you do it proactive or retrospective. You know, what's stopping a team going, you know what, just once a quarter, take the Fabric environment, put it into an Azure DevOps repo. We've at least got a snapshot for the quarter. If the team is not comfortable with doing, you know, daily commits and branching and all that, but they're okay with building the solutions in Fabric, then go build them in Fabric
Sync them
and
in
just
to
once a
Azure.
month go, This is the January release of whatever we had built, you know, and
No, I like
at least you got something, because half the chance your
Yeah.
monthly reporting is the one that's going to fail or your fiscal year end. So just go, well, snapshot the environment as at that particular date, you know, make sure you've got a
Awesome.
record of your connections and you're good.
So listen, that pretty much brings us to time, Heidi. What have you got coming up? Where will people see you, or what's happening?
I'm practically never home at this point in time. This weekend, I'm flying over to the awesome but very cold Christchurch, New Zealand for Data Saturday slash SQL Saturday.
Yes, I would love to be over with Hamish's mob over there, but I did go over in November, actually. That was a bunch of fun. Any time I get to Christchurch and Hamish's group, it's always good fun. And so this one, yeah, sadly can't make
I
it.
highly recommend anyone out there listening to this podcast, if you can, get over to Christchurch, New Zealand, and attend one of Hamish Watson's events. And then the weekend after, I'm actually flying up to Wellington for SQL Saturday Wellington up there. I've never been to Wellington. And then back home for a little while. And then later in the year, I'll be over in Seattle for PaaS Summit, presenting on Azure Data Studio. So, and Fabric Tenant, which is cool.
Actually, leave it a funny thing. One of my favorite things that they used to have in New Zealand when they ran the code camps, they ran it in a polytechnic just outside of one of the main cities. And but the thing I loved is that we stayed at this hotel, and in town they had a Japanese Thai restaurant, and I thought, "Whoa, that's sort of interesting." But in the hotel, it actually said Japanese Thai restaurant, and then in brackets it said Chinese.
Oh, Lordy.
I thought that's a thing of beauty. Yeah. So anyway, that's when you know you're in a country town. But it was a delightful place to be. So
Oh,
yeah,
that is
it's all good.
awesome. Thanks so much for having me, Greg. I have absolutely loved it. Loved it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Hardy.